Welcome to a new episode of Her Healthful. I'm your host, Araste, and we've finished up the attachment series. It's the end of February. So if you haven't listened to those, definitely check it out. I can't believe it's almost March. I'm recording this on the last day of February, which I always forget is a shorter month. So March is coming and so is the time change, which I mentioned in last week's episode, but literally I'm counting down the days because that just means the sun is going to come out earlier, it's gonna stay longer, and it's basically summer. At least I'm gaslighting myself to think that it's basically summer because this winter has been so mild, even though today it's freezing. So yesterday I posted a question box on topics you wanna hear on the podcast or guests you wanna hear, and I have a few suggestions that I'm gonna try to incorporate, and today's episode was actually inspired by a few of your suggestions, so thank you for that. But I have realized that I have not had any guests on this year because I wanted to get back into the swing of solo episodes and to just be consistent with that to start off with. But there are definitely going to be more guests, so if there's particular people that either have been on the podcast before and you really want them on again, or new people that you'd love to hear me have a conversation with, then definitely let me know because I want to do more guest episodes. But from the past, I've always heard from you that you enjoy the solo episodes the most, which is why I'd want to do maybe like 70% solo episodes and 30 guest, maybe 60-40. I find guest episodes a lot easier to record because it's just a dynamic conversation. I'm not like hitting pause if I stumble on my words, which also makes it more unfiltered. I might be saying more ums and likes, but it's easier to bounce off somebody else's idea. And also I'm not talking the whole time, which is nice because solo episodes can be tiring. And I think that's why I kind of fell off the podcast last year. But you know, I've been really trying to show up every week, and it's the end of February, and I think I posted an episode every week so far, which I'm really proud of myself, giving myself a pat on the back for that. But again, we need a break every now and then, so I think guest episodes are a good way for me to have a break from talking into a mic for like 30 minutes, because other than that, I would just like take another hiatus, and I really don't want to do that. So all that to say, let me know if you have any people you really want, because I'm going to be planning out the next month or so and trying to get in touch with people to have them on the pod. I don't have many updates for you this week. I went on a little girls' cabin trip the past weekend, and it was in Prince Edward County, which is like 2 hours away from Toronto if you're not from here. It was just a nice getaway. We honestly didn't do anything crazy. I think on the Saturday we stayed in literally the whole day. We just went outside for like the sunset, and because we forgot the main ingredient for our dinner, because there was a kitchen, so we wanted to make dinner. We wanted to make a tomato feta pasta. Guess what we forgot to buy? The pasta. We got everything else, so we had to run out and grab that. It was really funny. But yeah, it was just a wholesome weekend. We stayed at Wander the Resort, which is just like a cluster of different cabins. There's a restaurant on the premises, outdoor hot tub. There's Lake Ontario, literally two steps away. So I feel like in the summer, it would be so cute because you could just jump in the lake and the vibes would be so nice. There's also a farmer's market in the summer, so I definitely want to go back. But for a winter cozy vibe, it was perfect. It was stunning. The aesthetics were on point. And for a girls' trip, it's just like the best to have a glass of wine, play board games, and just chit chat. It was the perfect getaway. And I think for March, I'm gonna be staying home. I feel like February, I was gone for probably a good week and a half, almost 2 weeks, if you consider Miami and the cottage, which I know is not even that insane. I feel like people travel so much these days, but no matter what it is, even if it's like a drive outside the city, travel always disrupts my routine. And then it takes another week to feel fully settled back in, you know, after doing all your laundry, getting your shit together. So it feels like most of my month was affected by some sort of travel, if not being gone or the aftermath of trying to get back in the flow of routine. So for March, I'm staying at home and I just want to get a lot done because I have so many goals and things that I set out for myself in January, and I set deadlines for them, or like an ideal timeline of when I wanted to accomplish certain things by, and one of them is in April, so I really need to bunker down in March and just get stuff done. So if you're wondering what I have set out for myself in April, launching a business, and I'm already taking the steps to making that deadline hopefully like stay on track. So I already have somebody to design my website. I'm actually meeting with her today on Zoom. She lives in Chicago and I just fell in love with her work. I found one of her website designs on Pinterest, of course, Pinterest. And I feel like choosing somebody is the hardest part. I was gonna go with somebody else, but it wasn't fully resonating and it just intuitively didn't feel right. But with her, in my gut, it feels like I was supposed to find her, even though it was just me scrolling on Pinterest and thinking I could design a website by myself. I don't have the time, and I feel like to make it super customized, you just need somebody who's a pro. And on top of that, I have a photo shoot booked this weekend where I'm gonna be taking nice artsy professional pictures for the website itself and the different pages. I have a photographer and I love her work. Her name is Alyssa Lancaster. You might've heard of her, but her page is stunning. I've also met her in person multiple times, not on a photography basis, but just like getting to know her. And I think you really need to vibe with who your photographer is, because they're going to be with you on the set for 2 hours or whatever, and you want the outcome to be the best. But if you don't feel your best and you don't feel comfortable, then you're not going to be able to show any side of you on the camera. Obviously, posing in front of a camera requires you to be comfortable, so I'm just glad I have somebody that I know I get along with and our energy matches. So yeah, I'm finally getting the ball moving on this. I was procrastinating for a month, and I feel like I always do this where I put something off and then all of a sudden I have this jolt of energy to do everything, and finally I realized it wasn't that hard to do in the first place. I just needed to sit down for an hour or so and find what I needed and do the research. So this is your reminder: if you're putting something off, it's probably not going to take as long as you think, even though the thought of it makes you want to go and binge watch a show or do anything but that task. That is just the definition of adulting, is putting off those small tasks and realizing it only took you 5 minutes and then repeating that every single time after. I always get in my head about booking a dentist appointment or doing the most trivial task, and then I end up dragging it out for so long. Does anybody relate? Because I swear being in your 20s is just that. One last update before I forget is I want to start incorporating a group chat to each podcast episode. So think like a Geneva or Discord where you can then discuss the episode after, and I would be in the chat. If you had any questions or follow-ups or just want to meet other listeners, I've heard other podcasters do this and it sounds so cool, and just a way to connect on another level, especially because I feel like I'm just talking to you but you can't talk back to me, and I would love to get your thoughts beyond just DMs and actually have it be an engaging conversation. So if I start that, then I'm going to link it in the show notes and start with this episode where you can join. I think I'm going to use Geneva because that's the one I've heard of being used for podcasts the most, not sponsored or anything. So yeah, just look at the description to join and then you sign up. Super straightforward. And then we can chat, and it'll be so nice to talk with all of you and have you guys talk with each other as well. So for today's episode, it's going to be on my academic journey, but more so things that I think you should know before you start grad school, things maybe I wish I knew, basically just like a PSA. If you don't know what you're getting yourself into, you're thinking of applying, even if you're in grad school, this is great to listen to because it's just information that can be useful at any stage. So let's talk about things I wish I knew before grad school that you should definitely consider. So if you're new here, let me just do a quick reintroduction, recap of my grad school experience and what I actually studied. So I did a master's and PhD joint program at the University of Toronto. They don't offer that program anymore. You can do a direct entry now, which means after you finish your undergrad or your bachelor's degree, you can just start your PhD and apply. You don't have to do a master's. What really appealed to me about doing a master's is that if I changed my mind and wanted to leave after, then I would at least be able to leave with a master's. If you start a PhD and then 2 years into it, you want to leave, there's no such thing as a two-year PhD or any sort of acknowledgement that you did that. So if you're on the fence about post-secondary education, then I would recommend maybe doing a master's and at least starting with that, because it's a way less time commitment. And once you finish it, you'll at least leave with that. Whereas if you're not sure about a PhD and you want to leave halfway, you're just not going to get any recognition for that. So like I said, I did the joint program and they kind of assume that if you're going to do the master's, you're going to the PhD. So if there's other joint programs, just be aware that they might be expecting that, but there's no agreement that you have to sign saying you're definitely going to do the PhD. Like there were a few people who left after because it was really nice to be able to do a master's in 1 year when it's typically 2 years. My area of study was psychology, specifically social psychology, and the advisor I had in my master's carried over. It was the same in my PhD, so who I was applying to was for all of those years, which was really nice. And yeah, so I studied emotions, emotion regulation, how we regulate our emotions in times of stress across different contexts. For example, one stressor could be discrimination and how people cope with that. Other stressors would be, you know, what's going on in the news. So I did some work in politics as a stressor, and I'm happy to share my Google Scholar page for anyone who's interested. Although, quick note, I'm not going into academia, so I probably won't have many papers, just a few more lingering ones while I wrap up the work that I wrote up for my thesis itself, but I'm not going to be starting any new projects just because that's not going to align with my goals. And again, I'm not going into academia. But yeah, that's an overview of what I did. And so now I have a PhD in psychology. So this is just from my experience being in psychology, but I think in general, PhD life, no matter what discipline you're in, is generally pretty comparable, unless there's certain deadlines or time frames that are different. Like, of course, there's going to be a few things that are different, but the overall process is similar. No matter what, there's going to be a defense, a written dissertation, just like the overview of what you typically hear a PhD might look like is going to be similar. So just take it with a grain of salt. If you are in a totally different discipline, it's good to look into that and look into the program specifics itself. So the first thing I wish I knew, which I also did know, but not to the extent that I know now, is it helps a lot if you have research experience, but especially in a lab. Of course, this is what makes you a stronger applicant, but I don't think everybody has the same level of experience. But basically, this is my way of saying, try to get that experience during undergrad and before you apply, and also try to learn the different skills. So for example, I got my first research assistant position in second year of undergrad when I realized that I might be wanting to go to grad school. So I had heard that it's good to start when you're in undergrad. And so I started with one research assistantship, and then that person introduced me to another professor who I did work with. And once you get that first one, it becomes so much easier to get the rest. And I would apply everywhere, email all the labs, because all of them have a email on their website and they say if you're an RA or if you want to be an RA, apply here. So definitely do that. But I started there, and then in my fourth year I did a mini thesis. It was like a part of the research specialist program at U of T. So I got kind of a feel of what a thesis would look like, but it was condensed into like a semester, so obviously not on the same scale. But all of those skills I learned from being an RA, that research specialist program, helped me so much. And I didn't realize that not everybody learned those skills before. So it just makes it a little bit more tough when you're in grad school to then play catch up in a way. For example, one of the things I wish I started on before was getting familiarized with statistic programs like SPSS or R. That will help you so much, because in your first year and maybe part of your second year, you're just trying to familiarize yourself with the programs and the coding and what tests to use. Obviously, you need some statistics knowledge in the first place, so you're going to be taking those courses in grad school, but the programs and just familiarizing yourself with them is going to be so, so helpful. So yeah, I know this point might sound obvious, but it's just good to hammer home because that is a lot of what you're going to be doing for like 80-90% of the time. Is it's research or it's meetings about research or lab meetings. So it's really helpful to get yourself familiarized with the things you're going to be dealing with all the time. Another aspect is how to read a research paper and just like skim it and know what it's about. That is such an underrated skill. I know some courses really try to teach you that, but some of them don't. So it's good to kind of do that work on yourself as well and know the sections in a research paper, know how to read an abstract and basically get the gist of a paper. You just want to make everything streamlined and efficient and have at least a bit of a system in your brain for when you're dealing with things like that, because you're going to be dealing with a lot of papers and you never want to read a full paper. There's ways to save your time. And I know now with AI and different forms of ChatGPT, you can read a paper without really reading a paper. Like you can get things to spit out the summary and the main points that you need to know. But still, if it's like a test or if it's something where you need to do it yourself, then you should know how to and to distill information in like a critical way. Second thing I wish I knew is how important it is to be compatible with your advisor. And thankfully, I had people warn me about this, but actually being in grad school, you're like, oh my gosh, you are dealing with your advisor on an everyday basis. They are really gonna make or break your grad school experience. So these are the steps I would take beforehand to ensure that you have a good advisor that fits well with your working style. First, obviously, you have to meet with them, whether it's virtual or in person. You just have to get a gauge of what their energy is like and whether they have a personality that meshes with yours, a working style. Obviously, people can put their best face when they're meeting you for the first time, so take it with a grain of salt as well. We can get a lot from first impressions, but at the same time, it's them trying to lure you, persuade you to be part of their lab if they really want you. And there's rose-colored glasses, like you want to see the best in them for sure. So just keep that in mind. I think this is when it's really important to talk to other grad students that they've had and have those conversations without the advisor there, because obviously they're not going to say anything bad about the advisor if they're right there. So I remember when I was touring different schools, I was really only choosing between two advisors, and one of them was outside of Toronto. So I went to visit that school, meet up with the advisor, and just like have the typical day where you're meeting everybody and considering going to that school. You haven't accepted anything yet, but they have showed interest in you. And I remember when I had the lunch with all of the students, the grad students, without the advisor there, they were literally telling me and the other prospective grad student that we should not come work in this lab, that the advisor has no work-life balance, expects you to do things on the weekends, on holidays, and really impacted their mental health, which to me, I was so thankful, because if I didn't have that conversation with the grad students and if they didn't essentially warn me and this other person who was considering this lab, there would have been a much higher probability of me going there. That was just like the red flag that I really needed, and they also probably knew that I got a good impression and that the other person got a good impression, because I did not see any of that from meeting that advisor. Again, they're putting their best face forward, so it could be hard to pick up on those cues, but wow, the stories they were saying and just like how miserable they sounded was a wake-up call for me, and I was like, I am not going here. I hadn't even met the advisor that I ended up going with in Toronto at UFT, but I was just like, I would rather not take my chances there. There was also no girls in the lab, I'm just realizing. It was all boys, so I didn't love that I, you know, didn't have a perspective from another girl, because that advisor was a male, and I just feel like the dynamics with a male advisor can sometimes be a little iffy. So I personally really wanted a female advisor, which is what I ended up with, but there's like little details like that that aren't really little, they really matter, because you're going to be with this person for 4 years and it's a relationship at the end of the day, so you need to really be on board. And again, Don't be afraid to ask grad students, like in an email, all the questions you have, like what's the culture of the lab? Do you get along with your advisor? What do you not like about the advisor? What is something about their style that you wish you could change? Just like all the nitty-gritty questions you could think of. And I've had prospective grad students email me and ask those types of questions, and I'm always happy to reply. And if anything, I'm always excited to tell them about the advisor I have, because I really didn't have any negative things to say, which is just like a blessing in itself. So don't hesitate from doing that. It's only going to help you. Third thing I wish I knew is all about finances and how it works with funding and getting paid as a grad student. So I feel like a lot of people don't know that as a grad student, you should not be paying for school. Like, you pay for school, but you should not be losing any money because you get paid through funding and being a teaching assistant. So it's not like undergrad where you're left with a ton of debt because you have to pay tuition every year and you're not making any money. In grad school, you are making money, but the level of money you're making is really low. It's like barely minimum wage when you calculate the hourly rate, which is just crazy to me because we're doing so much work for the advisors and just, you know, research itself. And I think the school, at least my school, made me sign something silly where it was like, I promise not to work anywhere else while I'm in grad school. And I'm like, how can you make us promise that when you're literally not even paying us well? So literally nobody followed that rule, just like an official thing they had to do. Obviously, I started a social media page, and that was not for that reason. It just like ended up helping me financially down the road. So I think you need to be ready to delay making money, at least like good money, because this is just to cover your basic living expenses. A lot of people I know had a second job in grad school, whether it was like a server, a barista, something that's totally unrelated, and it was just for money. And I'm not even kidding, the teaching assistants at my school are supposed to go on strike on Monday to kind of fight about these things, about not being paid enough, not having enough benefits. So it's something that everyone is aware of, and it's going to be like the slowest strides ever to make a change. But yeah, York is already on strike, and now U of T is going to go on strike, and this happens every few years. But it just baffles me that one of the richest schools in Canada can't afford to pay their teaching assistants more, but they pay the CEO or whatever, the president of the school, like 300-400k a year. And I don't even know what he does. Like, what does the president of the school do? I have no idea. I just know that he doesn't deserve that money, because nobody deserves that money. Like, what are you even doing? I really cannot. Obviously, this gets me heated, but this is just like something you need to be okay with. It differs from school to school, but in general, grad students are not making bank, just so you're aware. Fourth thing I wish I knew is all about work-life balance and how advisors and professors in general usually don't have work-life balance. Like, it's not a 9-to-5 where you're working at a certain time and you're thinking about work at a certain time. Like, you can basically set your own schedule in grad school, which, to be honest, that was one of the aspects I love the most, is I don't flourish in a 9-to-5 setting. So grad school is perfect if, say, you're a night owl. If you want to work from like 8 p.m. to 3 a.m., you can totally do that. Nobody will bat an eye. As long as you get your work done, you can have whatever hours you want. It's not like you are answering to somebody at a certain time of day. You just have to be respectful of others' time. So like, basically, you don't expect somebody else to reply to you at 3 a.m. as well. It's the same way with advisors. They know that your working hours might not be the same as theirs, and a good advisor at least should be aware of that. But if you are working odd hours, I would just say it's like good to communicate with your advisor, other people in your lab, that you don't work during the day or like at the typical hours, just to like make that clear from the start. So if they do get emails at 4 a.m., they know why and aren't caught off guard. I actually remember this one professor who said she wakes up at 4 a.m. every day. Like, that's just like her everyday wake up time. But she also has 3 kids, and she's like, there's literally no other time for me to get my work done and my writing done. So that's what works for her. And obviously, it's different for everyone. But yeah, my point is that sometimes you need to communicate with your advisor that you won't be working on certain things in the evenings or on the weekends. Like, no matter how much they need something, there's never a real need for something to be done unless it's like a deadline for being submitted to a paper or a grant deadline. Like, other than things that have deadlines, most of academia doesn't have a hard deadline. And so things can wait. It's not worth your mental health. And it's really worth having discussions and like maybe reflections at the end of every semester. I know me and my advisor had that. It was called a 360 meeting. And basically at the end of every semester, we would just talk about things that are going well, things that we want to change, how our workflow is going. And it's so important to have those check-ins because it's hard to just be aware of that sometimes as a student, as an advisor. We get so in our bubbles that you just need to have a sit down and to reflect on that. And then it's nice when you see things actually change for the better. All that to say, you need to set boundaries, not only with others, but yourself. Like, try to set times where you're working and where you're not thinking about work, because it's easy to work all day and not realize that you haven't had a break. So just something to be aware about. It's a lot more self-discipline, but also just like self everything. Like, nobody's really on you and you have to set your own schedule. You have to make sure things get done. So it's a lot of initiative on your part. Wish I knew that more getting into grad school, because I think learning how you schedule things and when you work best is so important to know. I work the best in the mornings, so oftentimes I'd rather go to bed early and then wake up early to do work instead of staying up late. So just kind of learn more about yourself and what works best for you. I have talked to advisors and professors who still don't know what their best working style is, and it's trial and error, but at the same time, you need to be able to have a routine for yourself that works. Last thing I wish I knew is in terms of career path and jobs, because I think the most traditional, classic job everybody thinks of post grad school is becoming a professor, going into academia, having your own lab, and doing that for the rest of your life. And I wish I knew, or I at least like researched more non-academic jobs and things that are not so typical, because I think I realized at the halfway point, and this is most people, they make a decision at the halfway point of whether they want to go into academia or not. And I was realizing it's just not for me, and I don't want to have research be what I do for the rest of my life. Like, even though I find so many parts of it fascinating, I think I found the content and the results more fascinating than doing the work itself. It's very laborious. It takes a long time to actually publish something. And the missing piece for me was not seeing how this research would like make a change in the world and how it would be applied to people's lives. Because one of the biggest things that's missing from research is making it accessible to everybody. Like, nobody, no average person is reading research articles and actually understanding what they mean. First of all, it costs money usually to read research articles in journals if you don't have access to it through an institution like a university. And when they are available, it is written in the most dry, dense academic jargon that people don't even understand what is being said. So there's such a disconnect in the research world and the real world. And I think I was really getting fed up with that. And I just couldn't contribute to something that was not really reaching people. And so I want to kind of be more on the side where I'm helping that research reach people without doing the research myself and conducting all the studies. And so more on that later in April when I like launch my business and everything. But that's just like the little things you don't realize and what you don't like about a field. It takes time to actually realize that and then be able to articulate what is kind of setting you off. Like, you're having a gut feeling that you don't want to do this, but it's hard to articulate at the beginning. Or like, maybe you loved it at the beginning, and so that's how it was with me. And then after having a few conversations with other grad students and my advisor, I was like, oh, this is what I don't like about it, among other things. But that was the most salient, and at least for me, was the driving factor for me not to go into academia. All this to say, being a prof is like not the only job you can get after. There's so many different jobs, and there's a lot of workshops and things you can attend that are non-academic focused, and they're becoming definitely more popular. If you go to conferences, there's usually like a seminar or something that's on non-academic jobs, which is always really helpful and it's great for networking. I would say a few of the main categories are government jobs, nonprofit, consulting. I did a consulting course last year because I was like, oh, I don't know what consulting is. Maybe I should just try it out and see if I'd want to go into that. Let me tell you, I still don't know what consulting is. No offense if you're a consultant, like they make a lot of money, definitely, but I still don't even know what that job is. Me and my group. So there was somebody in that class that I ended up recognizing from TikTok, like so random. And now we're really good friends. And we had to do a group assignment. So I was like, okay, you're the only one I know in this class. And he had two other friends that he knew. So we did a group project and it's like a case competition. And we ended up winning. Like, I don't know how we ended up winning. None of us want to go into consulting. It was the funniest thing that's ever happened. So it was great that I took that course because I knew after that I didn't want to go into that. So try to do things that are like low stake, because that course was a certificate, like it wasn't a grade, and it was a way to kind of immerse myself in that field, not learn exactly what it is and realize I don't want to go into that. Good thing is I made new friends, but yeah, try to immerse yourself in low stake experiences like that, because then realizing you don't want to go into something is just as useful. You can also go into data, like being a data analyst or researcher. So basically, if you really loved working with data and statistics and want to work with other data sets and kind of see what else is there, especially for larger companies, a lot of the times they have really big data sets and need somebody to distill what is the main result. That wasn't for me. I liked stats, but I didn't love it enough to go into that. There's user experience. I know what that is, but I also don't know how to explain it. So you're gonna have to Google that one. And then there's entrepreneurship, obviously. And that's where I'm falling. I have definitely been very grateful that I started my social media page when I did. It was a creative outlet, of course, but it's going to be helping my journey into my new entrepreneurial venture. So I'm always happy that I just went for it and stayed consistent with it, because it's definitely paid off and it's super helpful to have that right now. But yeah, there are a lot of non-academic jobs that really just like you don't know they exist until you learn about them, and it's hard to even imagine what else is out there. But the main thing to remember is the non-academic jobs rarely care about your publications and your research. So if you're kind of freaking out about that, they literally don't care what your PhD was on. What they care about is the skills you acquired. So you being a critical thinker, you knowing how to use R or Python or these other coding languages, you working in teams, being a collaborator, working with different co-authors and having your own team of RAs, run an experiment, or presenting your work at conferences and being able to really have your work be accessible to others. There's like so many skills you acquire as a grad student, and they're so sellable. Like you can convince anybody that you're deserving of being hired if you sell yourself in the right way. So just remember, unless you're going into academia, your publications don't matter, and it's something that's really only glorified in the academic circle. Who knows why? It still baffles me, and it's like another reason why I didn't want to go into academia is because I didn't want my reputation to be based off the number of publications I got. It's just silly. It's a silly way of doing it. But yeah, I think that's all I have to say about career and just different paths you can take. Obviously, I'm taking a super non-traditional one, but I also love that for me, and that I'm just creating a job for myself because it feels so right, so in tune with my personality and the lifestyle that I want. And I'm just happy to be done. It's so nice to be talking about this in a past tense where I've gotten over the hurdles and it's just come to a close. My graduation is officially in June, so still a few months away, and that will be the real cherry on top and being able to like say goodbye to school forever. It's gonna be nice. It'll be my last time walking across the stage and getting a diploma, because I also did that for my master's. It was also a whole thing. And yeah, I'm done walking that stage. So that will be something to look forward to. But yeah, I had a few questions about just like PhD life, the journey, and I thought this would be a good segment to do and to just have it be kind of like a mind dump of things I wish I knew. And I'm sure there are more things, but these were the main ones that came up. If you have any follow-up questions, don't be afraid to DM me. I'm gonna try to start that Geneva group chat, so maybe ask questions there, and that way if people have similar questions, you can have them answered at the same time. But that's all I have for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you're having a lovely start to a new month. I will talk to you next week. Bye.